Is this room 222? No, it's episode 222.
Room 222 with Karen Valentine.
Yeah, Karen Valentine. Yeah, with her miniskirts.
As the teacher, everybody wanted to lay.
Those polyester double knit. And weren't they like plaid tilted on its side?
Yeah. In my memory, they are. Everybody wanted to tap that.
Oh, man. I didn't know. Is that true? Okay. Everybody wanted to tap Karen Valentine?
Well, in that role, when you're 10 or 11 and you're discovering your, you know, your hormones, sure. You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for March 7th, 2014. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live with microphones completely out of Daryl Issa's nefarious reach, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
I want to give a hat tip and a shout out and an award to Heather at Crooks and Liars.
Heather has been doing great work.
She's been doing great work.
She does, has done great work all along, but I have poached a lot of it in the last several days.
We found out this morning that Daryl Issa has, quote unquote, apologized.
Yeah. I'm sorry if anyone was offended.
No. Yeah. He apologized to Representative Cummings for, you know, something and said, quote, I should have been more sensitive. And Heather wrote me an email and said, how about try not to be a massive, spite-filled, lying dick?
Yeah, baby steps, honey. Baby steps.
She wins the Don't Sugarcoat It award.
Yeah.
Tell us what you really think, Heather.
Well, Daryl Issa is the real victim here, honey. He's the real abused, misunderstood. You know, it's a witch hunt. You know, once upon a time, the have you no shame, sir, at long last, would have caused something to happen, snap in the national subconscious to say that's enough. That's you've really gone too far. But we don't live in that world anymore.
Well,
these people don't have
that, because I do think it's time for the Democrats in the House, who have nothing to lose, let's face it.
Yeah.
To just continually say the emperor has no clothes. The emperor has no clothes.
Daryl Issa is a witch hunting thug.
Yeah.
And Daryl Issa has always been a witch hunting thug.
Yeah.
And the reason he's getting away with it is because he's a Republican.
Yep.
And the Republicans love their witch hunting thugs. This is the Clinton years all over again.
Yeah.
This time with a car thief, douchebag, liar named Daryl Issa at the helm. But they're all like Daryl Issa.
Yeah. Well,
they're
I don't understand what they have to lose at the in the House.
Nothing.
By just saying it.
Nothing.
You know, so I like you say, I don't think there is going to be any have you no shame, sir moment, because the media then turns right around and goes both sides.
Yeah. Well, you know, I remember somebody said something mean about George Bush when he was president. You know.
Some
both
people
sides.
Say.
Uh-huh. And we're going to get to that.
Just as bad.
We're gonna dig right into that.
We're gonna dig right into that, as we usually do.
In a little bit.
Did you hear that Bernie Sanders in an interview said he was ready to run for president?
I did.
What do you think of that?
I'm glad Bernie Sanders exists in my universe.
Mm-hmm.
He's like a relic, an alien relic from what I always call the better universe.
Mm-hmm.
In my universe, all Democrats, he's a centrist. Bernie Sanders is a centrist in the better universe. I'm very glad he's there. I'm glad he is ready. He didn't say he's actually running or even interested in running, but he's ready to do it. I think a Bernie Sanders presidency would be really cool. I think Bernie Sanders would make a terrific opponent. I think he'd get whooped, but I don't think he cares.
No,
I don't think
he cares either.
You and I being complete geeks, I think we were on the road listening to him filibuster.
Yes, we were.
Yeah. And an actual filibuster. And it was full of good information and thoughtful
Well, it was published
commentary.
As a book. His filibuster had so much fact in it.
Yeah.
And it was facts about the current economy and the current state of the middle class in America. It was not green eggs and ham.
Yeah.
And he published it.
Yeah.
Or someone published it.
I'm delighted. I wish we had 60 Bernie Sanders in the Senate. The world would be a radically different place if he were the default setting for the Democratic Party.
Well, my concern is that rather than move Hillary Clinton to the left, what it's going to do is people will point to Bernie Sanders as someone says, well, you know, that Rick Santorum sure is kooky. Yeah, but we got Bernie Sanders on the other side. And, you know, that's just as crazy. And Chuck Todd did that.
I'm I grow less concerned about that every day, because that's like saying, well, if Barack Obama did this, Republicans would hate him. They're going to hate him whatever he does.
Yeah, right.
It literally doesn't matter what Barack Obama does or says, yeah, or doesn't do or doesn't say. They're going to hate it, period. Therefore, no matter what the Democratic Party does, no matter what, they're going to find a both sides way to report the story.
Yeah, yeah.
They always do. They always will. Until their media bubble is burned mm-hmm. to the ground. And they are driven into the streets and forced to get honest work doing honest labor.
Mm-hmm.
That is going to be the default setting for our media forever. And
well, that's
again,
why I'm forming a third party, Driftglass.
You are?
The quesadilla party. You know about the quesadilla.
Oh, yes.
I am a quesadilla.
I am a quesadilla. Well, we have a...
As our little youngest child who just turned 10 uh-huh. said when she was 4, she
yes.
put on a glasses and mustache costume, and she walked around the house saying, I am a quesadilla. I am a quesadilla.
Because it sounds...
It sounds so cool.
The sound of the word is so adorable.
Right. So we decided that's the name of our political party, which means we fully admit that we don't allow enough Mexicans into this country legally.
Right.
We're pro-gay everything.
Yep.
And we believe in redistribution of wealth.
Yes. Yes, we do.
Those are three. But now you've given me a slogan for our uh-huh. party, which is we tell the truth.
Yeah. Well, I proposed, you know, the No Labels Vanity Project, you know, rolls merrily on. I propose No Liars, the No Liars Project, which would basically use their graphic and their saying. And it's basically, you know, if you lie to us, we're not interested in what you have to say.
Yep.
Period. If lying is again, your default setting, mm-hmm. then I don't care what you have to say about anything. And that, again, that's where
we're... See, that's the word you're not allowed to use in Washington. You're not allowed... calling someone a liar is a horribly rude thing to say.
Except there's an... Even as we speak, by the way, we're doing this live and fast on Friday morning.
Yep, and you've got a lunch meeting, so we're going to get her done.
Well, but the crud has moved into our house.
Yeah, and we both got crud, but although we're getting over crud, I should say.
Yeah, but middle child was very sick yesterday.
Poor baby.
And she was. They're in the middle of testing, and she
standardized testing, which you know we could do 3 more podcasts about that.
Yeah.
But
they
want 6 kids at school this week.
Yeah, well they want, you know, and she's really good, and they wanted she soldiered on bravely yesterday, and we got a call, and she was just
I really need to come and get her.
So she was really, really sick.
That's the
point. So yesterday we were inconvenienced we had to bump it to today. So this is if this is a little bumpy or whatnot, it's because I have not given my sound editor enough time to smooth out all the loose ends. So
and I also want you guys to know how critical the podcast is to our family life. Youngest child said uh-huh. to me this morning, so have you recorded the podcast yet? Well, you better have it done by the time I get out of school. You know?
And I told the youngest child, get off my back. Quit riding me. You're a monster. And then she said, I'm a quesadilla.
I am a quesadilla.
And my heart melted. Yeah.
All right. So
all right.
Barack Obama, super tyrant in mom pants.
Yeah. 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 Well, I wanted to say for the record that it's just nothing more clearly underscores the absolute. And I mean this sincerely, nothing has more clearly underscored the schizophrenic lunacy of the right than the way they whiplashed back and forth in their grievances over Barack Obama. They will never say anything nice about him, ever. Put a gun to their heads, they're never going to admit he's ever done anything right in their life. That's why the whole idea of saying liars being impolite. Right now, as we record this, the Conservative Political Action Committee annual conference, CPAC, is going on in Washington, I believe.
Yes.
And they have panel after panel after panel where they do nothing but call Barack Obama a liar and a tyrant and a monster and the worst president in history. So it's okay to call people liars if you're a Republican. There's no downside to it. And there's no downside to just making shit up, which is basically all CPAC does. But watching from the outside, even as a disinterested observer, as Republicans in the same sentence will go from saying Barack Obama is weak and feckless and does nothing and creaming in their pants over the thought of an actual bare-chested tyrant who comes in and just rides roughshod over the political process, does whatever the fuck he wants, conquers countries and tells everybody to screw themselves, and then turn around and say Barack Obama is the greatest tyrant in American history, his lawless tyranny, hate, constitution for shredding, etc., is the worst thing that's ever happened to the Republic. In the same sentence, Sean Hannity says things like this. And the problem is there's nobody to hit him in the head with a board.
Yeah.
He just says it. And he will keep saying things like this. But that little lens into how completely soulless and evil the Republican Party has become is useful to future historians. It's of no value to us now because we all know that. But hopefully when somebody unearths our civilization a century from now and says, what the hell went wrong with these people? You can run clips of Fox News. Oh, it's those people.
Yeah, well, that's where I see the whiplash effect on the other side, too. Uh-huh. Is their love for Putin and Russia all of a sudden is hilarious. I mean, this is the axis of evil.
Right.
Soviet Union. I mean, somewhere I know that Eisenhower is having a really good laugh over
this. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, and somewhere Lee Atwater saying, I told you so.
Told you so.
Told you so. You put a bunch of rednecks, inbred imbeciles in with a bunch of fundamentalists, pour a lot of race hatred on top of them, shake for 30 years, and you're going to get people who will praise Russia, praise a foreign dictator for invading another country, and berate the American president for not doing that, and then turn right around and berate him for having signing statements and doing things by executive order and having czars.
Yeah.
So it is, again, we realize, of course, we're preaching to the choir, but this particular moment is so adorably Republican.
And we don't talk about foreign affairs too often on our podcast, but I did want to point out there have been some analysts who have said, I'm not saying some people say, I'm actually looking at these articles, where Putin has silenced anti-Semitism talk in Russia in favor of anti-gay talk. That's very interesting.
Yeah, well.
It plays better on the world stage.
It does.
And you can get the right on your side. If you're anti-Israel, the religious right in the United States doesn't want to hear it.
But if you're
anti-gay, you're pushing all the right buttons. So it's very interesting to me. And obviously Putin, as an autocratic leader, needs someone for his people to hate. So he's going after the gays instead of the Jews, you know, and it's meeting his needs very handily.
He like a certain party in this country has found their internal enemies.
Yep.
Has focused the hysteria of his base on their imaginary internal enemies and to the detriment of paying attention to what he's actually doing. And he's getting away with it. And that this is the Bush presidency. This is 8 years of George Bush. And so I understand why the Republican Party loves him, because he is, like I said, P plus Cheney is Putin.
Yeah.
And they can't admit that they miss him, because then a bunch of smart alecky liberals will start talking about the many, 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 many horrible things George Bush did and all the burning crap he left
the
behind.
The 23 million reasons. Yeah. That Dick Cheney is a monster. They're called dollars that he earned in profit in 2003 off of this war with, you know, no bid contracts. He got no bid contracts for everything that had to do with that war that he wanted. He got a no bid contract.
By the way, I did watch most of the Rachel Maddow thing last night. Spoiler.
Most of it.
we went into Iraq for the oil.
Yeah. Well, I love Rachel Maddow, and I thought her documentary last year. On the Iraq War was really amazing.
Yeah.
This one, she could have tweeted it. Yeah. I mean,
well, this one was essentially a large part of No End in Sight.
Yeah. Yeah.
The documentary I went to go see in a nearly empty theater in Chicago many years ago, which was a terrific documentary. Mm-hmm. But several of the same people were interviewed. This time it's just sort of digging up through FOIA and leaks and stuff, the actual internal memos of people saying, yeah, this is about oil. This is all about oil. We're planning to go in to take the oil fields. There was zero planning.
The takeaway was all those secret meetings that Cheney was holding with energy executives. We thought that at the time that was domestic energy scheming.
Yeah.
And it turns out, no, it was about Iraq. So that, to me, was kind of a new takeaway. But
And the idea that they were holding a bunch of these high-level meetings at the headquarters of KBR.
Exactly.
Which is a subsidiary of Halliburton.
Well, that way Dick Cheney's secretaries can make the coffee.
Yeah.
You know, that's why.
But let me just add, this comes as nothing the kindly Dr. Maddow said, hat tip Charlie Pierce, came as any surprise to anybody on the left at all.
Right.
I don't know who this was supposed to sway or convince or nail down. I understand why you do this sort of thing for history.
Yeah.
So that I joke about it, but 10, 15, 20 years from now, you can look back at this documentary that puts a pin in the map and says, this is why we went to war in Iraq, period. Mm-hmm. There's no debate. Debate's closed. There are people who...
Well, and I do think that's really important that there be a one-hour video of this for high school students in the future to look at and say, oh, this is what Dick Cheney was about, because the Forgettery Project is in full force right. So
and the flip side is, I'll bet you the screening room for the Rachel Maddow video at CPAC was nearly empty.
Well, they were all watching Ronald Reagan Rendezvous with Destiny by the Gingriches.
Or, and I just want to run through these.
Yeah, run through the schedule for CPAC.
I just picked a few of these out of a hat, and I'll hold a couple more in reserve just to make a certain point I plan to make at some point. But Ronald Reagan Rendezvous with Destiny, emceed by Newt and Calista Gingrich, sponsored by Citizens United. Andrew Breitbart, Defender of the First Amendment, emceed by the horrible Mark Levin and sponsored by Citizens United. The second annual tribute to Andrew Breitbart, sponsored by Citizens United. The screening of Occupy Unmasked, starring Andrew Breitbart and sponsored by Citizens United. And on and on and on it goes. It is a festival of asshat, false history, etc. But there's one panel that I wanted to mention in particular that is just so on the general theme of why debating these people is a complete waste of time. There is a panel at CPAC called What's the Deal with Global Warming? It's moderated. I have that in my notes in quotes because come on. Mm-hmm. By Joe Bast, who's the president of the Heartland Institute, which again is a libertarian think tank that believes in freedom, Blue Gal. And
yes,
really,
it
and its bread and butter is lying about climate change. Then on the panel is Murray Energy Corporation, which is the largest private coal company in America. Then is the Competitive Enterprise Institute, which is yet another libertarian think tank. And in their blurb, they say it's over 25-year history. This is from Steve Forbes. In its over 25-year history, CEI has played a critical role in preventing the worst of the left's utopian nightmares from becoming reality. So they got that going for them. Then is the Frontiers of Freedom, which is yet another libertarian quote-unquote think tank and climate change denial scam that basically reprints, as far as I can tell, all the emails you get from Crazy Uncle Liberty. That's what they do, and someone pays them to do that.
Yep.
Then is the Climate Depot, which is still another professional climate change denial outfit that basically reprints what Frontiers for Freedom has on its front page. And then finally, Abundant Power, which I can't find anything substantial about at all. That's the panel of discussion of climate change at
Well, you know, Abundant Power is a drill baby drill fracking group. You know,
I assume they are. I don't know what they are, but that's their panel discussion on climate change. Wow. One libertarian liar after another, moderated by one of the worst libertarian liars on the subject, period. And that's their idea of a fair and balanced discussion of climate change.
Well, and it all goes back to money in the Beltway. I mean, it all, anything that you talk about always swings back to paying people at these institutes within the Beltway. I mean, the reason I've heard several people on Coase and Crooks and Liars and so forth say, oh, look, all this coverage for CPAC, and they pretend that Netroots Nation is just some college group, you know.
Yes.
And it's because, look, they always hold their conference inside the Beltway so all these congressmen can come at 7:30 at night and give a speech. That is a magnet for cameras. If a lawmaker, quote unquote, is speaking at a conference and you can get there with a drive and you can get your cameras there and they're in the hotel and that's it. But if you have it in Detroit and Las Vegas and the Heartland and every place else, which meets the needs of the attendees to be, we're Netroots Nation is careful to make sure that they're in a union friendly city, that they move it around so that different activists from different parts of the country can come, so that they're always available to get there inexpensively and so forth and try to make it affordable.
Yeah.
CPAC just gets money from Citizens United and has the Beltway, and that's it. It gets the cameras they want.
The number one sponsor, as far as I can tell, just by signage on their website, is Koch Industries.
Yeah.
Right there on the front page.
Yeah.
And so they have a shitload of money being poured on top of them. They have all of their think tanks, the same people who all year round are cranking out Republican Party messaging, are all there. They get the Senate minority leader to come. They get the top tier presidential candidates, whoever they are, to come. They get all of their greatest hits. They get all of their big hitters. They get all their players to come and talk at their conference. They're also the out party now.
Yeah.
So there is a certain amount of, there's no place else to go. There's nobody in the White House that's carrying their message for them. So I kind of get that. When you look at the people who line up behind outright crazy people.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of coverage, the amount of media coverage that CPAC gets because Wayne LaPierre said something crazy, yeah, or because Ted Cruz is there. Oh, golly, what's Rush Limbaugh going to say today?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The amount of network. And what it means is these people over here are serious. They're players. They're spending money and they're bringing hitters to the show. These people over here are having a college dorm party.
Well, that's the way it's being covered, yeah.
And that's and I don't like that it's being covered that way, but it is being covered that way. And if you continue to consciously choose to be the outsider, that's fine. But when nobody takes you seriously, I remember seeing this, I hate to do this, on the Twitter last night, is what we need is a liberal tea party. We had one. It was
called Occupy.
Well, yeah. Occupy was a bunch of very good ideas and a joke.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of classic, let's find a way to make ourselves appear as completely irrelevant to average people as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Generate good ideas, but let's make sure all of our optics make people think of us as lunatics.
Mm.
The messaging was the message was great. The idea of buying back property is great. The number of experts they were able to deposit at MSNBC to talk about this is wonderful. But they don't exist anymore. They have gone into the background. They had a moment. We had a moment. And we decided, I hate to say it, that a bunch of people doing finger twitters in Zuccotti Park was the message we wanted to send.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the message that we sent. And I have been part of liberal organizations that have gone down that road. They're all defunct now because they can't get their shit together. They can't understand how to take their good ideas and translate them into policy and political power.
You're listening to the Professional Left podcast, professionalleft.blogspot.com. I wanted to bring up something. Do you know what both sides in the Ukraine have in common?
Besides
location.
No.
Both sides have hired ex-U.S. lawmakers as lobbyists.
Oh, that's nice.
Found that out in Bloomberg Politics this week.
That's a good dollar.
That lobbyist dollar is, that's what I'm getting to. It's all about Beltway money. It's all about who can we make rich.
Well, and on the missing the forest for the trees, I would like to point out that although all the facts are not in yet, it appears that Bill Nye, the science guy, succeeded in getting enough funding for his enemies to build their crazy ass NOAA exhibit, which was the point.
Yeah.
This is about debating people. This is about understanding why you're debating them. I guess that's my point.
And you want to get into that because you were right about Bill Nye.
Yeah, Bill Nye walked into a fucking rake. Yeah. He walked into a situation where he could not possibly win. He had people there. There were supporters. I know they were cheering him. That's great.
Well, and he is a hero to those people that agreed with him before.
Right. And right. I have gotten comments and emails saying you're wrong. You know, should Clarence Darrow have been silent? No, but it's not 1920 anymore. Who is there left to convince? At this point, we are settled into an example of trench warfare. There's their side and our side. And we keep believing that if we just are persuasive, if we just get our words together, if we just line up all of our words in the right order, if we just have our facts straight, then somehow we'll have a breakthrough somewhere. And some of them will go, oh, crap, I've been wrong for 30 years. Let me rethink my position. Let me clearly state that will never happen. That is never going to happen. It might happen with this few of the people in the middle who can't quite decide in 2014, is evolution true or creationism? I just don't know. But the idea that Bill Nye is going to go into the belly of the beast and take them on will get him lots of kudos and accolades and applause from people who already believe him.
Mm-hmm.
And who require no convincing. What it will get for his enemies is the sustained belief that their position should be taken seriously. Look, mm-hmm. we got the scientists to come in and debate us.
Yeah.
And money.
And money. Big money.
And it will get their crap funded. And Bill Nye afterwards, when told, it appears that they made enough on your event to make it possible for them to fund their stupid ideas, was heartbroken and saddened. The next time you do this, how about talking to someone who didn't drink the Kool-Aid? Talk to someone who understands the first fucking thing about media and marketing and understand that you are about to hand your enemy a sword to stab you with and that maybe that's not a good idea. So, yeah, but that was all about money. It was all about suckering some well-meaning liberal into a quote-unquote debate so that we can claim victory and I can fill my coffers. That's all that was about. And they succeeded. They won. And
yeah, they won a lot of money for their creationist museum.
Now,
congratulations.
On the other side, I got to give big compliments to Ed Schultz.
Yes, we do.
Because Ed Schultz, being a liberal, actually changed his mind. When presented with enough pressure and enough facts, actually reversed himself on the Keystone Pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
Thus verifying our liberal bias that it's okay to change your opinion based on the introduction of new data, based on the introduction of facts. Oh, gosh, I was wrong. I am now going to change my mind. It's okay to do that.
And he physically went out to the area where the grassland, the pipeline areas, and talked to farmers and talked to people out there about what is really going on here.
Gosh.
Oh, this is not good. Yeah.
It sounds like suspiciously like journalism.
Yeah, it is. So congratulations, Ed Schultz.
We're changing your mind.
Changing your mind publicly. Yeah.
It's okay to do that.
Yep.
And shall I talk about the changing your mind and debating?
And debating your younger self? Is that the one we're at? Okay.
Yes. Take a swig of that.
We want to warn our listeners that this is the Glenn Greenwald Minute.
Yes. Well, I have tapered way off on that, I believe.
You really have.
I understand that this is now just such an irritant to some people that you hear the word Greenwald come out of my mouth or out of my keyboard, and it's just, oh, God, he's doing it again. Yeah. So I'm asking you to bear with me. When you get into a debate with your younger self, you should at least acknowledge that you're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Pretending that you never held a position that you did hold, that you said in print, that you protested loudly and vehemently that you believe in, and then reversing yourself is not a sin. It's sort of virtuous. It sort of says, I have grown up or older or wiser, or when presented with new data, I have changed my mind. But if it comes to pass that all you are doing is creating one set of rules for everyone else and one set of rules for yourself,
mm-hmm.
and holding everybody else to account for this very high standard of accountability, and then you're letting yourself off the hook for exactly what you excoriate others for doing, then you're a hypocrite.
Yeah.
So young, slightly younger Glenn Greenwald, back before he was Pierre Omidyar's employee, back before he had $250 million to build a media empire, really beat up on Politico.
Yeah.
You take your boss's money. Journalists know where their money's coming from. How can you say you're not influenced by your boss's political opinions when your boss signs your paycheck? That's ludicrous. Said Glenn Greenwald when he was a free agent.
That was not too long ago.
This was not the late 70s. This was a few years ago. Now Glenn Greenwald is being paid by a very rich man who has very clear political opinions. Glenn Greenwald in one column says, Pierre has nothing to do with our editorial process. Jeremy Scahill, in another separate column, says, oh, no, Pierre's all over shit. Pierre has a clear vision, a political vision. He has a clear thing he wants to accomplish. He's deeply involved in our process. Nobody does more internal messaging than Pierre does. He's hands-on. All right, well, either one of those is true or the other is true. I don't know who's lying, but clearly somebody is. But more importantly is the point that Pierre has certain political outcomes he's interested in. He invested his money, considerable amount of it, in overthrowing the government of Ukraine, which might be a good thing or might be a bad thing. But he has certain beliefs and opinions that wouldn't challenge with the fact that, look, your boss has created a media empire. He has a very clear political agenda, and he spends lots of money on causes that you might not agree with or might run contrary to your values. Glenn Greenwald said, what does his political value? I didn't even research the guy. What does his political opinion have to do with my writing? It has nothing to do with me. I'm a journalist. I have complete independence. What my boss thinks or believes or how he spends his money is of no interest to me and has no effect or bearing on my writing.
Wow.
All right. Obviously, you've changed your mind. Yeah. Maybe you should go back and apologize to Politico. But I have a feeling that you really don't want to, because you want to hold everyone else to standards that you have no intention of following yourself, because you are incorruptible.
Well, and I want to get into how scary it is. Apparently, it's perfectly okay for billionaires to get involved in overthrowing countries. I mean, that's always been the case. But
sure. When
you see it, when you see it very clearly, that sets a precedent for some really bad things to happen.
Well,
I find it ironic that, you know, Drone Glass is criticized for being an Obama bot because Obama's using drones to, you know, interfere with the governments of other countries and so forth. And Pierre Omidyar is overthrowing other governments.
Hell, he's helping.
Benevolent or not, the precedent is what happens when the Koch brothers want to overthrow Iraq.
Well, they already did.
They did. That's the point. Yeah.
But and it's co-investing your money with essentially the American government.
Yeah.
You're helping the American government I'm not saying there's not a rich and vibrant discussion to be had over the virtues of overthrowing a particular government or not, or keeping the hell out of people's business or not. I always got the impression that Glenn believed in staying the hell out of everybody else's business, mm-hmm. Which his boss seems to not believe. Mm-hmm. But the point being that this is not the first or the fifth or the 17th time that Glenn has staked out a position clearly with very, very firm adjectives, you drooling statist asshole you.
Yeah.
That you go back a couple of years and he believes something different. And I have no objection to a person changing their mind or evolving. I object strongly, again, to them holding two diametrically opposed opinions and flipping back and forth between them when it's politically convenient or economically convenient or philosophically convenient for them to do that and pretend that's not happening. That's
and let's
problem.
Not forget that the Secretary of State did that this week, too. Comment that you can't just go into a country and take over their government.
Yes, you can.
Apparently,
you
if you're the United States of America and you want the oil, you can do that.
I want to say this is not just a Glenn Greenwald minute. I wish him all success. I'm glad Matt Taibbi is going to pick up a paycheck now from a reliable source. Yeah. I'm delighted. But David Brooks this week wrote a column about the horrors of a single-minded messianic dictator with a grand apocalyptic or grand religious, pseudo-religious vision, a grand sense of his own nation, all the disaster and mischief that that person can do if you let yourself be swept away in a messianic, pseudo-religious vision of what your country should be doing because God put this country on this earth to accomplish this thing, which is, hey, you got me there. Of course, you go back about 10 years and you find that David Brooks is writing columns about national greatness and about how America should be possessed of a grand vision because God, et cetera, wants America to do A, B, and C. And he and Bill Kristol were absolutely down with. And he even wrote, it doesn't even matter what the government does so much as it does something great and big and spectacular to restore our sense of ourselves and our sense of mission and destiny. And then, of course, comes the Iraq War. And he was completely behind our own messianic visionary leader George Bush doing grand, amazing, exciting, disastrous, lunatic things in the name of our national destiny and a great and encompassing, totalizing vision of what America should be doing in the world.
Yep.
Okay. And I had a lot of fun with that. I actually took apart one of his old columns and put them side by side with paragraphs from his new column. Said, I defy you to tell me which column this comes from. The one that's supporting the idea of a grand national vision that powerful individuals should embrace to drive the country forward, and one which appears to be diametrically opposed to that vision. And Charlie Pierce did the same thing. Again, I have no problem with someone's opinion changing to face new facts or to embrace reality or to come to the realization that they were wrong. But David Brooks doesn't do that. He just embraces one ideology when it's convenient, then he discards it, then he embraces its complete opposite when that's convenient and discards that and goes back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. It's time for me to stop talking. Why don't we go to the two letters?
I want to read a letter that we received on Facebook. This is from a woman, and I don't know. She's from Memphis, Tennessee. Hey there. Hey, Memphis. Shout out to Memphis. I have to say thank you to you both, because yesterday when our fantastic Senate voted down any more benefits for veterans, I almost felt like I was the idiot for volunteering to go into the military instead of going to school. I felt like crying for all my children, who are now in the 25 to 32-year-old in age range, their friends, many of whom went to Iraq and Afghanistan and got out because they couldn't take it anymore. My sons and my military service are considered crap you wash off the sidewalk. Then I heard you, and even my husband noticed it helped me to not get mad and sad, but to get out and make this bullshit stop. Amen.
Yeah.
I haven't quite figured out how yet, but with all the veteran widows past and present, the people in the VA hospitals, and the children who have lost a family member due to this craziness, I believe this may be the Fat Woman Sings moment.
I hope so.
Amen.
I really do hope so.
From an unemployed 57-year-old veteran in Memphis.
Yeah.
We love you.
Love you. And there
go
are
for it. Don't get mad. Don't get sad. Get active. We're going to change this. You are not alone.
And there, you know, 1.something million American soldiers went through Iraq or and Afghanistan. Yeah. And they have families and they have friends. And this one issue is so, there's so clearly a right side and a wrong side to this.
Absolutely.
That, and I don't see how you can come down on any other side other than the people who say our veterans are just, who want to take pictures of the veterans, who want to wrap themselves in the flag, who want to talk about supporting the troops. And
who want to reopen the government so they can go to their World War II memorial.
Yeah. Who want to invade
healthcare and food.
Who want to invade every country you can name.
Yeah.
Because if we just have the will to do it, we can do it, Senator McCain. But when it comes down to actually paying down the price of putting young men and women in harm's way over and over again, the human price, the long-term human cost of going to war, they couldn't give a shit about it. They don't give a damn about it. That's something that, that's in the past.
Well, and war is abstract, and it's not about, and poverty is abstract. Let's face it, that's their fault.
Yeah. Those mooching veterans who use food stamps.
Yep.
Uh-huh. Well, and
we're going really radical on that. I mean, I'm furious.
Well, and here's, maybe this is the time to talk very quickly about Rachel Maddow.
Yeah, go ahead.
There was, as we mentioned, she did her show last night, and she actually appeared on, this is a documentary on Why We Went, explaining to the people who didn't already know it, why we went to Iraq. Again, spoiler, it was oil. But she went on the Jon Stewart show, the Daily Show, the night before to promote her show, and she was really angry. And she was really angry with, why do we keep putting people like Paul Wolfowitz and Bill Kristol on television?
Right.
They're awful.
Asking their opinion.
Why in God's name are we, and Jon Stewart joined her in a great banshee cry of, what the fuck is wrong with us? Yeah. That we keep asking these people their opinion. We keep giving them jobs. We keep putting them
Dick Cheney on the phone to tell us what to do.
Why do we do that? And Andrew Sullivan has finally said, why the hell are we asking John McCain's opinion about anything? John McCain's been wrong about everything since forever, and he's the most frequent guest on Meet the Press ever. Why the hell are we still asking? Why does David Gregory, he actually used the G word, is continuing to invite this guy on? And my question...
So Andrew Sullivan said David Gregory in his column? Oh, yeah. Wow.
Well, he said Meet the Press. I think
Meet the
Press or David Gregory.
No,
And I asked Andrew Sullivan a question he will never answer, which is, hey, Andrew, while I was busy being called a traitor and a liar and an un-American, like pretty much every other liberal for the last 30 years, you were busy snuggling up. You were actually close friends with Don Rumsfeld. You were really close friends with Dick Cheney. You palled around with him. You've been on Meet the Press. You were on the Chris Matthews Show a million times. You've been on Face the Nation. You have, while I was busy being an outcast and pariah like all liberals, you were building up this incredibly good media resume where you have everybody's phone number.
Yeah.
How about you call David Gregory and ask him that question?
Golden Rolodex. Don't tell us you don't have David Gregory in Rolodex. Right.
Or his booker.
He doesn't open your emails. Give me a break.
Or George Stephanopoulos. Call up George Stephanopoulos. And if you don't want, if you're afraid of calling David Gregory, call up George Stephanopoulos and find out why his 12-year-old producer, who 10 years ago was editor of a student paper and is now a senior executive producer at
ABC News.
Decided that it would be a great idea to hire Bill Kristol on full time and put him on the air every fucking week on ABC. Why don't you call him up and ask him that question? Because, Andrew, you don't even return my emails. George Stephanopoulos ain't going to return my phone calls or my emails. No one there is going to answer my question, but you are an insider. You know these people personally. I've seen pictures of you at parties hanging off of Arianna Huffington and people like that. Mm-hmm. You can call them up and you can get answers. And you know what that's called? It's called journalism. You call and you ask them why they do the things that are driving you crazy. And then whatever their answer is, if it's, I don't have an answer, or I refuse to answer, or some bullshit, you go to your blog and you publish it. And at the end of that, you have something called journalism. And for Rachel Maddow, I have the same advice, which is, you know what, Rachel, I get it that you're pissed that Paul Wolfowitz has a job. And I get it that you're pissed that Bill Kristol is allowed to go on ABC News. But you know who the biggest offender is? Your fucking colleague, David Gregory. So please don't come with this, why do we do this stuff? We don't do this stuff at all. You do this stuff. You and your friends. I don't mean you personally, Miss Maddow, but your friends, your colleagues, the guy on the morning show that you never talk about, The calls are from...
And let's face it, the two buzzes about who's going to replace David Gregory are a wishful thinking of Rachel Maddow on the left.
Yep.
And everybody else saying, no, it's going to be Joe Scarborough.
Yeah. So if you want to do us a favor, Rachel, and I love you, take your blowtorch of truth and start putting names that work for your network in front of
She'll
the
get
wider...
Fired.
There's the problem. And while you're talking about the Iraq war and consequences and holding people to account, this is the problem. This is the giant hole below the waterline of your credibility. Mm-hmm. If you want to start holding people accountable, I can't do it. I'm a dinky little blogger in the Midwest. And the only way you're going to do that is by naming their names and asking them. Name them, shame them. You know, like with gay rights, you name them and you shame them. You call them out for their bad
behavior. I don't think anyone on television, though, has gone as far as Rachel Maddow.
I don't think
to do that.
Absolutely
right. At the risk of her own career. So.
But she stops at the waterline.
Well, but wouldn't you?
I probably would because I'm a worse person than she is. But I'm saying if you're.
If you had a platform that she had to make changes. Wouldn't you stop at the waterline?
I would invite David Gregory on my show and ask him repeatedly, not in a hostile way, in a collegial way, why do you keep putting John McCain on the air? John McCain has been wrong about everything. Why don't you ever ask him if he's wrong?
She had a calendar on her show showing John McCain and when he was on.
Yeah. And John McCain
went as far as she could with it. If she invited David Gregory or Chuck Todd on her show to challenge them directly, she'd be fired.
And that's the story.
So that's the real story.
As long as you're interested in holding people to account, apparently you can't be part of the media.
Right. You can't. You are, as Melissa Harris Perry said, I get paid by a powerful white man to say words on television.
Right. That's right.
So that's the choice you make.
And as long as, and I believe the kindly Dr. Maddow is 100% sincere, as long as one sentence, the first sentence out of her mouth is, why are these people not being held to account for what they do? And the next sentence is, and now let's take it away, Chuck Todd. Mm-hmm. And as long as there's no recognition that that is a horrible cognitive dissonance between those two, then we're stuck. Then we're not going anywhere. Mm. You can be as mad about voting rights and gay rights and the XL pipeline and so forth. And I will agree with you on every one of those issues. But the real meta issue is that our capacity to hold public discussions is broken because the people who are in charge of staffing our public discussions don't let good opinions in and keep polluting the discussion with people who are wrong and bad and broken and never mention it. This is the classic alcoholic dysfunctional family where we're never allowed to mention the problems that dad's a drunk. Mm-hmm. And nothing ever gets fixed until we acknowledge dad's a drunk. Mm-hmm. And we're all pretending that something will change, but the problem is never the XL pipeline alone. It's never voting rights alone. It's never gay rights alone. It's the fact that the people who are in charge of our public discourse are inherently corrupt and will never change.
Because they are taking money over the table and under the table from the military and energy industrial complexes. Yep.
Internet kiddies want to know when Lindsey Graham's going to announce for president.
There you go. You did some great Photoshops of Lindsey Graham this week.
I had fun with Lindsey Graham this week. At least one of them was user-suggested.
User-suggested of church lady.
Yeah.
Lindsey Graham is the SNL church lady. Very good. Very good.
And Lindsey Graham is...
Graham is a tragedy.
He is.
Because he had to change to suck up to the lowest possible mental state of his party in order to win an election.
Well, he has to pick up gobs of red meat and throw it to people to prevent them from talking about the fact that he's a confirmed bachelor who seems very comfortable
in the company of men.
The company of and he's a very fancy man. And I have no problem with Lindsey Graham as a gay man, if he is in fact one, although that seems to be a pretty open secret. I have a real problem with him being one more closeted gay lunatic who keeps acting as a capo. Yeah. You know, the guy in the camps who sides with the Nazis, the guy in the camps who sides with his oppressor because that's where the money is. Yeah. It's grotesque, the kind of contortions Lindsey Graham has had to twist himself into to pretend that this is his party.
Yeah.
But this is his job. And so if we take him seriously, I would love to see Lindsey Graham announced for president. He is establishing his conservative credentials. He has called the problem in Ukraine was due to Benghazi.
Yeah, was an extension of Benghazi.
He's set all the right bumper stickers in all the right places so he can fend off the even crazier people in his primary. Fine. There's no front runner now. It's the ghost of Ronald Reagan and a bunch of pretenders and wannabes. So my question is, why isn't Lindsey Graham being seriously considered? He's got a record. He's as crazy as a Betsy bug. He is willing to say any fucking thing to anybody to get elected. Why isn't Lindsey Graham announcing for president? Why does Lindsey Graham, if he believes so strongly in this stuff, how come he's not running for president?
Because his wife, Ersatz, doesn't want him to run.
That's exactly right. Because the fragile hinges on his closet door would be torn off by the mob.
In a minute.
And it's but that's, again, that's another sort of open secret that we don't talk about, because dad's not a drunk. Dad's just very tired and has a short temper.
He worked so hard
all week long investigating Benghazi.
Have you gotten any checks from Murray Energy this week, Driftglass?
Only the one, honey.
This show is not sponsored by the largest private coal company
by anybody.
In America.
Yeah.
We promised you. Yeah.
I got a lump of coal, I remember once. That might have been Murray Coal.
That might have been Murray Energy Corporation. They might be throwing a lump of coal through our window.
But no. Our
show is financed by you guys when you get your tax return.
Yeah.
We totally understand that. We've gotten a handful of emails this week, or I have. As soon as my tax return money comes in, I'm sending you a contribution. Believe me, I got our taxes done this week. I get it. We all get it. Thank you. We have another listener letter that I want to read.
Please.
Hello, Driftglass and Blue Gal, writing to you from Phoenix, Arizona. So I am sure you could imagine how hungry I am to find progressive and liberal discussion and enlightenment. So glad to have found you and your honest and bold podcast. I relish you each weekend as I listen to you through my Stitcher app. Yeah, I listen. You know, I listen to shows through Stitcher, too. I like that. I like that app. We don't get paid by Stitcher to say that, by the way.
No.
My husband started out wondering why I was shouting gleefully at the listening device. I knew it. That's so true. So now he is a listener as well.
All right.
Welcome to both of you. Thanks for your well-researched and insightful news and banter. Your respect for one another and your passion for what you do is evident. I'll do my best to spread the word as you are a breath of fresh air. Thanks again for all you do. You are loved and appreciated. God bless and take care. Sheila in Phoenix. Thank you, Sheila.
Thank you, Sheila.
And we're so glad you converted your husband to being a listener.
Yes. Yes. Remember, just keep that pot under the bed for like 48 hours and it will do the work for you.
Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitty is Carmella. Now, in the picture, Carmella appears to be on a leash, but it's her way of keeping track of her people when she lets them go outside.
Yes.
You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. You know we love hearing from you in any way. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service Go Postal Unions letter on the air unless you say otherwise. So, Driftglass, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties are pissed that CPAC rejected their panel idea. Our litter box, the IRS, and Benghazi, a world on fire.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whine and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under Creative Commons license, copyright 2014, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
Science Fiction University from our friend Ten Grain at Mock Paper Scissors.
Ten Grain, who owns Peggy Noonan.
He owns Peggy Noonan.
He trademark owns Peggy Noonan.
Absolutely.
If you're going to do Peggy Noonan is a lush or an idiot or a babbling coherent wiener, Charlie Pierce, you need to tip your hat and preferably drop a couple of bucks. You're a rich man, Charlie. You're rolling in. I see you on television. I hear you on the Stephanie Miller show. You have your own column, all of which I heartily endorse. But you should amble on over to 10 Grains and kick him a few bucks. And by the way, you should kick me a few bucks too. I'm just saying.
Is that really what you want, is money, not fame?
I will take money over fame every time.
Every single time. Yeah.
I don't want to be famous. Mm-hmm. I want my opinions. I want liberal opinions to have a place at the national table.
Wonderful. All
and
right.
I want to find a way to get there. So let's go on to Science Fiction University.
And Ten Grain moved this past year from Northern California up to Seattle.
Uh-huh.
And he writes, living in Seattle has its perks. Yesterday, I overheard some sci-fi fanatics check their street cred with each other.
Uh-huh.
And I jotted down some notes for you to ask Driftglass.
Uh-huh.
When you think you need another lightning round.
Okay.
There were a lot more. These are just the ones I managed to capture. The general topic is, how did the movie monster meet his maker, Die, Monster, Die?
Okay, good, okay. Good, good. So
how did this movie monster die?
Uh-huh.
Number one, the blob.
Didn't die. Was frozen, but never died.
Oh, frozen. Very good. Uh-huh. All right.
Steve McQueen. Shout out Steve McQueen.
Number two, the beast of the Hollow Mountain.
Oh, jeez. Well, it's a hollow mountain, so I'm guessing lava?
Quicksand.
Oh, okay. Well, so much for intuitively obvious to the most casual observer. All right. Next.
Rodan, the flying monster.
Some form of radiation.
No, it's lava.
Lava. Fuck me.
All right, number four, them.
Them. Oh, see, this isn't even fair. I know this because I was riffling through a little science fiction primer book. I would not have known this before today. But a little science fiction movie book, and it had the giant ants from them, and they blowtorched them.
Yep, flamethrowers, yep.
Yeah, but before this morning, I would not have known the answer to this.
You know, that little book you have, it's a short history of science fiction.
Yeah.
We got that from a podcast listener who sent us a very generous gift certificate to Oxford University Press.
Yeah.
He'd been paid, that you get paid wildly for writing, by the way, for writing encyclopedia entries for Oxford.
It's a good
in books. They pay you in books.
All the books you can eat.
All the books you can eat. So he sent us his gift certificate. Yeah. And that was one of the books we got, was the Short History of Science Fiction. Very, very good. Okay.
So we're lucky people.
The Beast from 20,000 Fathoms.
Oh, I don't. It was raised. There's an old joke about how to shoot down a submarine. You cover the water with green paint. The periscope comes up. It keeps rising because it thinks it's underwater. And then you shoot it out of the sky with anti-aircraft guns.
Oh, cool.
But that's a dumb joke from third grade. I'm guessing some form of radiation.
Yes.
Oh, really?
Shot in the throat with radioactive isotopes.
Oh, no. I would have guessed atom bomb.
No. Okay. Shot in the throat with radioactive isotopes. I don't know how you do that. I guess that's what my dentist does. Ah! But, you know.
Getting him in the chair is the hard part.
Yeah, see?
By the way, the new Godzilla movie looks interesting.
Looks interesting. Okay.
It looks good. The plot device in this one, by the way, this is in the trailer, so it's not really a spoiler. You know that Godzilla was supposedly awakened or created by
the atom bomb.
But right. In this case, the atom bombs were actually the secret behind the thing. No. They were using atom bombs to try to kill it.
Oh.
In the 50s, and they didn't succeed. Anyway, it's got Walter White in it. It looks really interesting.
The Deadly Mantis.
Oh, I'm guessing a big fly swatter.
That would be cool, wouldn't it?
It would be. An atomic fly swatter, as we used to say in the technology world.
An atomic fly swatter is one of those that has a lightning bolt on the handle. Is that what you mean? Yeah. No, well, he was gassed with cyanide bombs.
That would do it. No, atomic fly swatter is a reference in when I used to be a kick-ass technology guy before my career ended. Mm-hmm. It was reference to the user who wanted to wildly overkill what was essentially a simple problem.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, moving on.
That reminds me of when I was riding the bus as a kid, and there was a very creative young man on the bus who would draw pictures of his inventions, and he had an invention that was an anti-traveling salesman. This tells you when I grew up. Anti-traveling salesman, false front on your house that had an hydraulic pump that the whole front of your house would flip forward.
And kill him?
And swoosh away any traveling salesmen that were walking up to your house.
Wow. You apparently, that bus apparently had Ray Bradbury on it.
Yeah, see?
Taking notes. That's a wonderful story.
Yeah.
Fuller brush, person. I'm here to sell you fuller brushes.
Poof.
Yeah.
Invasion of the Saucer Men.
Oh, I'm guessing.
And Ten Grain says, I'm going to have to find this movie because it does sound really good. The Invasion of the Saucer Men.
I'm guessing the Cup Women.
No. Dissolved with High Intensity Car Headlights.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good one. I want to find that one.
High-intensity car headlights. Wow.
And finally, and this is a trick question, of course.
I suck at this game, obviously.
This is a trick question.
Uh-huh.
The Fly.
Oh, see, that isn't fair.
It isn't fair. You have to decide which fly you're talking about, right?
There are three or four different Fly movies.
Yep, that's true.
There is an actual sequel to the Fly movie, The Fly 2, which no one's ever heard of. The latter one with
Jeff Goldblum in that one.
No, it's Keir DeLay. No, I don't know who it is. It's David Hasselhoff. No, I really don't know. But the first fly, one is the thing with the fly head is crushed, mm-hmm. but the human part, the help me, which mm-hmm. still creeps me out, mm-hmm. Was eaten by a spider and crushed by a rock.
And crushed by a rock with a little, with a man coming over. And
yeah.
The little kid just wanted to watch him eat it. But, right?
Yeah.
Because it was cool.
And
I did find out my mother fainted in that movie, not when the little human head was on the fly, but when the man with the fly head was revealed. Because that was the part that was just so terrifying.
Yeah. No, I had just the opposite reaction. Of course, I was either not born at the time or just in utero, but... it was that creepy little voice. I always thought that was such an excellent touch. I think there was Vincent Price. Was that Vincent Price?
Yeah, that was Vincent. I think so.
Yeah. Well, I met him once in passing. Nobody at the Art Institute in Chicago in the 70s. And nobody on my bus full of people who beat me up would believe that I saw Vincent Price. And as the bus was pulling away, he was walking in the opposite direction. And I said, look, it's Vincent Price. And no one believed me. And then I sat down next to a kid who was drawing a drawing of a false building front that would get rid of traveling salesmen. So. Weird how our worlds have collided many times, honey.
The Fly was released in 1958.
Yeah.
Which means my mother would have been 17 years old. And Vincent Price was in it. And it's the first time atomic mutation on humans has been shown on the screen. Mm-hmm. Once it was human, even as you and I.
Yes. It's a very cool, and that is genuine science fiction, genuine.
Well, and it was nominated for a Hugo Award. The movie was for best presentation. So yeah, there you go.
Congratulations. Good questions, 10 Grain. Thank you very much.
Thank you, 10 Grain. We appreciate it.
Love you, babe.
Love you too.
Bye.